Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Welcome to the broadcast, everybody. It is Monday, Memorial Day, May 27th. We appreciate you tuning in and listening to the broadcast. So many of you download this and have shared this with others, but we hope you are having a great Memorial Day. We've got a great broadcast today. We've got some information that was an industry veteran and someone that I've had the privilege of knowing for a number of years, David Allison, who is Senior Vice President with Dobin Mule and the subservicer, Dobin Mule Mortgage, Inc. And David will be on talking about what you should expect from a subservicer and what is the role of subservicer. Certainly, a lot of folks are turning to subservicers. We're going to be talking to David later in the broadcast about that. But before we get into that, want to just say a big congratulations or thank you. Congratulations, I don't think the right word, but a big thank you to all the veterans in that have served in the service for us and have been just provided to us the freedoms as a result of their service. And we just say thank you to all the veterans out there, and a special thank you to the veterans or to the families that gave the ultimate sacrifice, and their family gave up one of their members of their family, died in service. And a special, my heart goes out in a special way to them today as we look at this holiday, as that holiday, that family table, that family gathering that's going on right now is a little hollow and empty because of that loss. So we thank you for your ultimate sacrifice. We thank you for what your son or daughter has done for our country, that we might enjoy things like this radio broadcast, being able to produce and go out to a nation, providing knowledge, information about the industry. Again, we're a one-of-a-kind radio program provided by mortgage bankers to mortgage bankers. We're thrilled that you'd make this a part of your regular broadcast. But Alice Alvey's got a great story related to Memorial Day. And so, Alice, I'd like to have you share your Memorial Day. You have a family member that was a veteran, correct?
Yes. Well, my Uncle Johnny actually is the one who got me in the mortgage industry. I'll never forget 30 years ago now when he said, "Do you want to be a mortgage processor?" And I said, "Sure, what's that?" You know, I'll go be a processor. So he's the one who actually, you know, opened the door for me for this industry. And he flew B-17 bombers in World War II. Now, he was a navigator. He wasn't the actual pilot. So it was B-17 Flying Fortress. Actually stopped in when he was 17 years old. He wasn't even old enough, and he snuck in and wanted to serve. But one of the favorite stories he always told us, you know, he was pretty quiet about anything that was traumatic, but he was very, this one happy story that he always liked to tell is he remembers on VE Day being in Piccadilly Circus, you know, in London there, and leading a conga line, being all happy on that day. He clearly remembered doing that. So he, and that's a tight-knit group, the B-17 crew. So my heart and thanks go out to all of you who have family and so forth who are in any way connected with that group. The World War II veterans, it's a very special generation.
It was. It's the greatest generation, as Tom Brokaw's book, The Greatest Generation That Ever Lived. And it just they gave so much and what they've gone through. And sometimes I wonder, Alice, if we've lost sight of some of the sacrifices as we look at where we're heading as a nation and some of the things that are going on. So we just continue to go back. And I think Memorial Days, holidays such as this is so special. My dad served in the service. My uncle served in the service. My uncle was in the World War II, served on the Pacific 30 Theater, and came back and was scarred by that for the rest of his life. And my dad served in the Korean Warfare. But then how many of my friends, I'm of the Vietnam veteran era, and so how many of my friends served in the Vietnam era, and so many that are a part of this industry have served there. So a special thank you to all you veterans. appreciate you for what your sacrifice has been and what you did for our nation to make us free. A big salute to you. Thank you very much. Joe Farr is out enjoying the holidays, so I'm going to do my best to give an update on all that's going on. We have coming up the economic calendar this week as we have consumer confidence, which will be on when is that one coming up? It's coming up here. I think that is on Tuesday. Also, the Treasury is coming out. Two-year auction is coming out on Tuesday. Wednesday, we have the five-year Treasury auction. Thursday, we have preliminary GDP numbers being released at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time on the 30th, as well as jobless claims, pending home sales. That'll be another interesting number. I suspect that is going to look fairly positive. The jobless claims anticipated to be flat at 340,000 jobless claims. And for the prior, it's about the same what it was prior year. So we'll see. There's some positive information coming out this week in recent economic reports. So those are looking strong numbers. So we'll see what that does. Of course, what that means is anything positive just has that impact on our prices direct to our industry. Friday, we've got the core PCE and the personal income, the Chicago PMI index is published, and then, of course, consumer sentiment, which is one of my favorite. I think that consumer sentiment number, the more I look at that, it really gauges how we look at things and how the consumers out there are viewing the economy and where we're at. So anyway, we just hope Joe will have a wonderful day. And last week was volatile. There was just so much going on. They were, it was just up and down and all over the place. So we really value services like what MBS QuoteLine is. And the reason I prefer them over the others is it just gets you the information on a real concise basis and right on the money when it's needed. Not lengthy stuff, not a lot of analysis, just the facts. I love that. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Good to have you back with us. I tell you, over the weekend, we had a lightning strike. It took out my laptop and one of my monitors, so I'm using some borrowed equipment here, and it's just not quite the same. Well, it's not borrowed, it's old equipment, and I thought I was going to have to borrow some equipment to do the broadcast, but we scrambled to put this all together and able to bring you the broadcast. Appreciate you tuning in. Alice Alvey, good to have you. Happy Memorial Day to you, and I like that story about, is it Uncle John?
Yep, my Uncle Dad, we call him.
Uncle Dad.
There's a long story that goes with that.
That's very cool. Well, there's a lot going on in the world of legislation. Give us an update. And good. By the way, thanks so much, Alice, for taking time away from family for just to be on the broadcast here. Appreciate it so much.
Oh, that's no problem. Actually, I have a Joe Farr story, too, from last week. I applied for a refinance, and it was one of those moments of, okay, do I lock or float? And I emailed Joe, which not everybody gets to do. I was like, okay, Joe, you know, I'm thinking I need to lock, you know, because it's not like there's a lot of room for rates to go down. But in any case, MBS QuoteLine was a great service. You know, yeah, hurry up, lock now. And sure enough, there was a midday price change that we beat. So that was great. The service work. Well, anyway, from a legislative standpoint, obviously we've got the main thing that I want to make sure everyone is got their radar on is the fact that we have one component that's still open for comment, and that is your chance to comment about issues related to repurchases under the ability to repay rule. So you have until June 3rd, and what you need to do is go to the CFPB website. You should have this saved in your favorites by now, consumerfinance.gov, and you select laws and regulations, and there's a drop-down for, you know, notices and comments, and you just simply select that and post a comment. You can read other people's comments, maybe just copy someone's that you like. But the big issue here is this is our main chance to let CFPB know what are the circumstances that can happen post-closing where you might be concerned, do I lose my qualified mortgage status, right? So CFPB has talked at a high level about, you know, if you completely calculated the income wrong, it is nothing, nowhere near supported in the file, and that ends up being a repurchase request from Fannie or Freddie, that loan loses its qualified mortgage status. There are multiple scenarios, and as those of you who deal in this industry every day, you know multiple nuances within that. And so that's why I think it's critical that we think through that, think through all the repurchase letters that you've had or, you know, all the worst-case scenarios that you could have on what if this happens on my loan, would it be a repurchase? Or and it ends up being a repurchase, would it also lose its QM status? We're trying to separate those as many times as we can, right, where you may have maybe due to a loan delivery error or a pricing issue or an appraisal issue that's unrelated to DTI, making sure it's very clear that we don't lose our QM status on those types of scenarios. And I think the more we get in there, the better. So we do need folks to have a meeting with your underwriters and your people who are good at thinking about worst-case scenario and putting some good comments for that one. We only have, you know, a little more than a week to go to be able to brainstorm on that one. And then the last thing I want to make sure I cover, Dave, for everybody is just this concept of preparing for CFPB and all of these things that are coming up. And I was surprised to have been talking to one of my customers who really didn't have the in-depth knowledge about the term defect rate. Now, Fannie Mae talks about a defect rate, but if you're not, and Freddie too, but if you're not directly approved by one of those agencies, you may not be really working with this term. And it is a great way to set measurements for yourself. So determine your defect rate in your QC reports for various topics, underwriting as well as compliance, and know where your defect rates are and then set measurements to improve those numbers. That is absolutely something to get put into place. I think Andy Schell talked a lot about some measurements on last week's show, if I remember correctly, related to servicing, but I'm just bringing up the point in terms of preparing for CFPB and preparing for audits. Know what your defect rates are in different categories and make sure you're on a path to improving those with every single one of your QC reports. That's the best thing you can do for yourself now while we're waiting for more information on the other regulations. That's my report for today, Dave. Back to you.
Talk about, just real quick, on the QM.
Sure.
So you're saying a loan can be, you can fund it, close it, and on a QM basis. It being a qualified mortgage and all the everything is applicable to that. However, in a look back or in a retro basis, they, after that loan has existed 2-3 years, some amount of time, the loan could go in default, and which will trigger a let's look back and take a look at that loan and pull it out. If in fact am I hearing you correctly, that a loan repurchase because of some defect in there, they lose their QM status, which opens up a whole new set of circumstances for that loan. Did I hear you correct?
Yes, that's correct. So this proposed rule is designed to try and clarify when could you potentially keep your QM in your QM status, because this component is about ability to repay. So remember, there's always the two parts. There's the product part of it that meets the QM status. So, you know, in theory, I've met all those requirements. It's a 30-year fully amortizing. I didn't exceed the three-point limit. All of those I kind of put in that category of the product. This here is the subject of the customer's ability to repay, which is that DTI and how did I calculate income. We want to make sure that's very clearly defined that, you know, if I did make a big mistake, my underwriter completely dropped the ball on an income calculation, and that loan is a buyback as a result of an income calculation, you would lose QM. You would lose the status of having verified that the customer had the ability to repay, and, of course, then all the trickle-down that would go with that, the legal exposure that would now be added, and then whatever issues you had related to how the loan was delivered to whichever agency. I mean, if you kept it portfolio, no big change, but if the loan was sold to someone, you know, what are the terms and conditions in that agreement?
That is so huge, Alice. Has the NBA come out and published their response yet that we can basically draft from, use, or plagiarize in informing our comments?
I'm not aware that they've posted yet, because they usually announce to the membership that they have, but I do need to double check on that, and I can report on that next week. Because next Monday, right, is June 3rd, so
yeah,
that's when we'll have to get our comments in. So I'm hoping that during this week at the very latest we can get their feedback on it. But I don't know if they'll get to drill down as much as, you know, you all can, as much as lenders can, to think through these scenarios. Let's not throw up our hands and let this kind of be a, oh, well, I'll deal with it at the time, because you're not going to be in a negotiating position at that time. QM is not a negotiable item. You know, they're trying to draw a very bright line, and you want to make sure we understand where those lines are early on before we close loans.
Interesting. The world is so changing, and how are the shifting sands underneath our feet, and many are feeling insecure about it, but you don't have to.
Yeah.
You could contact Alice Alvey, set up a training session. First of all, set up a phone call, set up a training session,
sure,
and she'll guide you through the whole process. Valuable stuff, Alice. And I'm just going to put a teaser out there. Next week, Alice has got a big announcement, and you've got to tune into next week's broadcast to hear it.
Pretty big,
pretty exciting. Exciting yeah, stuff.
We are very excited.
I'm very excited. And we'll get that announcement next week. So, Alice, I hope you have a great rest of the Memorial Day. Greet your family. I know I've had the privilege of meeting many of them. And you are so blessed to have such a large and wonderful family. So do give them my best. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you very much, Dave. Have a great holiday for you too, and Dave, our special guest. The Dave and Dave Show. We'll continue.
The Dave and Dave Show. We're going to Dave and Dave next.
Thank you
so much, Alice.
All right, take care.
Download it and listen to it. Alice, you'll enjoy it. It's good stuff. So great information. Alice, have a good one. Happy Memorial Day, and we'll talk to you
after this.
All right, until next week. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource, used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals, providing classroom and web-based delivery, and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lincoln.
Welcome back. Special thank you goes out to our sponsors. Of course, that is United Guarantee, and happy Memorial Day to them and all of their staff and all their customers. Also, a special thank you to Olive Oat, who make all of this broadcasting possible. We appreciate them and for being sponsors on the broadcast. Also, a special thank you goes out to Paul Mallow at IMF News. I'm looking at their website right now. Lots of great information. Paul is on the broadcast. He's taking the day off, obviously, as many are, but he is normally there. But I encourage you to go take a look at the imfnews.com website, and subscribe to the daily blog that Paul is responsible for writing. Lots of good information. And he seems to just get the inside scoop as things are breaking and happening. So anyway, those are a special thank you to our sponsors. Also, special thank you to Paul, and wish everyone there at with all our sponsors and there at Inside Mortgage Finance, a glorious day, and I hope you're enjoying yourself, whatever that might be on this special holiday. We have as a special guest on the broadcast today, David Allison. David has been someone that I've known for many, many years. He's truly one. You know, there's just something so nice to know that some things don't change. David has been with Dover Mule Mortgage for, it seems like, ever. And they actually started in 1990. It's about the time I opened up one of my first mortgage banking companies. I got set up with David, and I got to know him as a professional, a true consummate professional. Just a warm guy, but just really a wealth of information. The part that I enjoy most about David is that he's willing to share that knowledge and give to the industry in many, many ways. Dovermuhl is recognized, of course, as one of the industry-leading experts on subservicing. There's a handful of them out there that have the reputation or that are the size that Dovermuhl is. But David is just one of the reasons I keep going back to Dovermuhl as one of the primary relationships we have. We're very grateful to have him on the broadcast. David, I appreciate you taking time out of your holiday to dial in and be a part of what we're doing here today.
Well, happy Memorial Day, and thanks very much for having me. And, gosh, Alice did just such a great job. She's a hard act to follow.
She is. She's just so much a wealth of information that she has, and she tracks for us. It's just impossible. But, David, we've been doing a series of broadcasts on loan servicing, the economics of loan servicing. Should you get into it? If you do get into it, what are the things to consider? And we've covered regulatory. We had a great broadcast with Mitch Kinder talking about the regulatory components of servicing. And so I may have said subservicing. I mean servicing. And so the strategy, the economics are such more and more people are and should be getting into servicing and are doing so at a greater rate. But many of them are saying, I just don't have the wherewithal or the time or the bandwidth to be able to start taking on the servicing and actually do the servicing function. And so you're the final segment of a series of broadcasts on servicing, and we want to talk about subservicing. So let's start with talking about some trends, David, that are going on there. What are some key trends that you are seeing in servicing in the broad sense of the word?
Well, I think a few. The first, as you said, we're seeing many lenders, in particular non-depository mortgage bankers, that have traditionally sold all of their production, servicing release, to the aggregators, are now, for all the reasons that you have discussed in the prior shows, many of them are finding it far more attractive to sell directly to the agencies and retain servicing. It's been very interesting as we've watched this happen over the last 2 years. The lenders that started 2 years ago and 12 months ago that now have significant portfolios of mortgage servicing rights are finding that those portfolios are performing even better than the assumptions that they used when they made the decision in the first place. And as a result, one of the trends that we're seeing is the percentage retained keeps climbing. People that expected to retain 25% of their production last year are now wanting to retain 50% or more of their production this year because they've seen how well the asset is performing and the cash flow that's being generated. And I think a number of lenders are anticipating some slowdown in the refi activity and are trying to bulk up their servicing as much as possible to create a stronger annuity and cash flow, in effect saving for a rainy day.
And there we talked about that in some of our earlier broadcasts, and listeners, if you have not listened to the last series of broadcasts, again, this is the sixth broadcast in the series on servicing. So there's some great economic, great information, so go back and listen to that. But David, I too have been seeing this, that there's been a lot of people saying, well, we're just going to retain a little bit, get started. But they realize the economics are so favorable for this that they were actually able to step up the percentage of their originations retained over a period of time. And the economics were such that they didn't take the big hit. Now they're positioned, David, to have that annuity you were just talking about as the refinance volume drops and possibly the overall origination volume. So it's a great engine that just keeps everything flowing during those times where we have cutbacks. But, David, there's more obstacles out there. There are obstacles out there, and I want to kind of get your thoughts on what are some of the major obstacles for the lender to really get started with servicing. It's not the easiest thing to do, but it's not that difficult. So kind of help our listeners understand those major obstacles and categorize them for us.
Absolutely, and it's interesting. A second trend that we're seeing, and this is kind of very clear evidence of some of those obstacles, is that many of the depository lenders that have had servicing internally for years, in some cases 50 years and more, are now finding that the cost of maintaining that servicing operation internally, and particularly the cost related to the new compliance requirements, have caused many of those servicers now to begin to look at outsourcing. So the non-depository mortgage bankers typically did not have legacy operations, and most of them started off using sub-servicers. Those that did have legacy servicing operations, more and more of them are now looking at outsourcing and sub-servicing as an option, because the cost related to the technology, the staffing, and the compliance are so high that they don't feel they have the economy of scale to support an internal servicing operation. So in terms of the obstacles, the number one is economy of scale. There are at least 50 different components involved in a mortgage servicing operation.
Wow.
Different functions that have to be performed, from new loan boarding to customer service to cash processing to investor reporting and remitting, bank reconciliations, collections, workouts, default, payoffs, releases, credit bureau reporting, IRS reporting, and on and on. And in order to support all of those functions, which are all so different, you need to have technology and staff with all of those different skills. And that creates a huge barrier to entry and obstacle in terms of being able to support a smaller and growing portfolio.
Well, that's so true. A huge barrier. 50 various components in that. Has this always been this kind of number, David, or is just grown exponentially with the new regulatory environment that we're in?
It's not so much that the number of different functions has grown, it's the complexity of each function. And the requirements that the agencies have imposed, that the different states have imposed, particularly with respect to collections, workouts, and default, and even the municipalities in terms of vacant property ordinances and registration and maintenance. And that now, of course, the final straw in many ways and for many folks has been the new CFPB requirements.
Right.
With the hundreds and hundreds of pages of compliance requirements issued by CFPB, and no one believes, you know, we're at the end of that process. So
no.
there haven't been many new functions, but the difficulty of performing each function, the complexity and the specific requirements, have all grown dramatically.
So why do some lenders use subservicers instead of servicing in-house? And it seems like because of the economy scales, because of the complexity involved in the 50 various components that go into it, that everybody would want to be going to that. And you spoke earlier to one of the trends, more and more people are, in fact. But why would someone keep it in-house in light of this?
Well, many of the depository institutions, the banks, thrifts, and credit unions have been servicing in-house for many, many years. They may have a smaller portfolio with very low delinquencies in one state or county even, and maybe minimal escrow administration. And for them, they believe they can support that servicing on the core banking system. They have some technology for servicing through the core. And in some of those cases, and because the portfolio is so small, it may make sense to keep that internally. As the portfolio grows, as they add more delinquency requirements and escrow, if they begin to sell to the secondary market and have to service according to the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and Ginnie Mae, FHA and VA guidelines, if they expand into more than one state, all of those things cause the complexities to multiply, and more of them are now looking at outsourcing.
You know, intuitively, you would think that it's because, you know, when you're small, you can understandably want to outsource, but you're saying even as you grow, there's probably more impetus or more rationale, more reasoning to subservice and go to a Dobermule out there that can, you know, help you manage that, the complexities as you go into multiple states and with the growth. That's fascinating. You mentioned that there are some key regulatory compliance issues. What are some of the key ones?
Well, the biggest ones would be the new requirements issued by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, particularly the Servicing Alignment Initiative, and all of the requirements they imposed to call more frequently, to have more aggressive outreach programs, to change the way your default process has to be documented and tracked. So that would be one. The requirements
you call that
by
the servicing Fannie Mae Servicing Alignment.
Yes, this was an initiative by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to bring many of the requirements for delinquent and defaulted loans under one set of guidelines for both agencies. But in doing so, they also significantly raised the bar and imposed a number of new requirements on servicers to call earlier, call more often.
Is that where the single point of contact starts coming into? Or
exactly. They required that once a loan reaches a certain stage, that you establish a single point of contact within the servicing operation to work with that borrower going forward. They eliminated the dual tracking that used to be very common, where you worked
on a
modification and a foreclosure at the same time. Now they said that you have to exhaust all workout options before you can even begin to refer a loan to foreclosure. So there were a number of changes in that alignment initiative that made it much more difficult for servicers to comply, especially if they were using systems that weren't designed to support agency servicing. Another is the states. The states have all, we talk about national servicing standards, and the trend is exactly the opposite. The trend is towards different standards and requirements being imposed by many of the individual states, making it far more complex to comply on a national basis. And this includes additional requirements to document your files. In some cases, it includes requirements for face-to-face mediation sessions with a borrower to try to do a workout. So it's gotten a lot more complicated to maintain even an accurate matrix of what you're supposed to do across the entire country.
I get it. That's got to go to a cost component. I mean, it's got to be getting more and more expensive to be retaining servicing and providing these servicing functions. So it goes to the economies of scale. So how much of the servicing fee revenue does a subservice get versus the lender? I mean, is after what you're describing, is there any left over to divvy up?
There certainly is. It obviously depends on the size of the portfolio. But once a lender achieves a certain size and they're receiving, in the case of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, they would typically be receiving about 25 basis points of service fee income annually. So $500 per year on a $200,000 loan.
Right.
The typical subservicing.
That seems just so light, David. That just seems so light, given all the responsibility. Do you see that fee changing at all over time, going to a half?
Well, no. The discussion last year was about reducing it, and fortunately, the agencies backed away from that. We have been told that that issue is still pending. That has not been closed as a possible change to the servicing compensation. So that's still very much up in the air. But the discussion was about reducing it, not increasing it. But back to your question, of that 25 basis points, the subservicing fee is typically about $100 per loan per year, or about 5 basis points on that $200,000 loan. So the lender is still keeping 20 basis points out of 25, typically.
Okay.
And once they achieve, you know, a reasonable portfolio size. And then, of course, the lender also has to factor in the costs of funding advances on delinquent loans, of maintaining a third-party document custodian, and another significant cost is to maintain a capability internally to perform oversight on the subservicer. And this is another key trend. Fannie Mae in particular has raised the requirements in terms of what they're looking for lenders to have, in effect, a servicing manager to monitor and oversee the work done by any third-party subservicer. And so that's another cost that lenders should be aware of.
You talked about advances. For our listeners that may not know this, tell them who funds the advances and how much these are typically.
Right. Well, depending on how you sell the loans to the agencies or the investors, you may or may not have a requirement to fund advances for delinquent payments. When you sell to Fannie Mae using the cash window, advances for delinquencies are not required. But for any MBS pool and for Freddie Mac and Ginnie Mae, it is a requirement that the lender fund the advances for delinquent payments. And the lender is typically required to fund those rather than the subservicer. And the level of funding will vary widely depending on the delinquency rate in the portfolio. The servicer or the lender is also allowed to net prepayments in a current month, so that causes even more volatility in the amount of the advances. We've seen advances run anywhere from 0 to 50 basis points on a portfolio. And these are ultimately, or should be ultimately, recovered, but it's important that the lender set aside the liquidity to be able to fund these advances because they are absolutely required, they're non-negotiable, and the penalties of not funding the advances are very severe, up to and including being terminated and having your portfolio taken.
Wow.
So,
yeah, that's an expense that you just can't do.
Right.
There's huge value. So the coordination between the subservicer, Dovenmuehle, which, by the way, you guys do an outstanding job on your stuff. I mean, it's all the people we've referred over to you, they can't say enough good about it. They start with you, Dave, because you made the process so easy. So you have a good person coordinating with the lender, but let's talk about the lender. Do they have to hire a servicing coordinator or a manager up front to apply for the agency approval?
Yes. In effect, Fannie in particular has raised this or tightened this requirement, and they want someone on staff at the lender. It's not necessarily a full-time position, especially starting out, but it has to be someone that has had prior experience either servicing or working with the subservicer to handle agency loans and agency servicing. So someone that may have done interim servicing for the aggregators, you know,
right,
holding a loan 30 days or 60 days before it's sold to one of the big correspondent lenders, that's not going to be good enough. And Fannie is looking for someone that's dealt with investor reports and remittances, that understands the requirements, that understands the advances, and in particular understands the cash flows and how to monitor all that activity to be sure it's being done correctly. So this becomes a catch-22 because we work with many lenders that say, well, I don't have any servicing yet, and I can't afford to hire a servicing coordinator until I get the approval.
Exactly,
begin,
right. The chicken and the egg concept.
Right, chicken and the egg. But until I can accumulate servicing, and I can't get the approval without it. And it's been an issue. Many lenders have people on staff, maybe in the accounting area or in the audit and compliance area, that have had prior experience with agency servicing, and that usually works and gives them an advantage. If they don't have someone like that, it's going to be difficult to get the approval, especially with Fannie Mae. Freddie Mac and Ginnie Mae is a little bit easier, or both of them are a little bit easier, but even there, they're looking for the same type of oversight capability within the lender's operation.
And what Fannie Mae is telling me is that they also want to have them have recent experience. It's not someone you can get out of retirement that did this 10 years ago. They're looking for more recent experience than this coordinator person that works for them. But it you're right. It's a sunk cost. It's something you just got to step up to and do. And while it's not a full-time position, but it's going to be difficult to hire someone that has got a job on a part-time basis until you need them. So the reality is, right. I tell all our clients, you should just brace yourself, step up, so hire the person. It may be viewed as a sunk cost, but there's a lot of things that person can be doing that while you're waiting for the approval. Let's talk about how liquid the market is if I want to sell my servicing portfolio down the road. We're hearing reports that the trades are starting to pick up. What's your perspective on that, David?
We have seen some of that. Following the same kind of industry publications and sources that you're looking at, we've seen some non-traditional investors, some of the private equity and hedge funds, come into the market with approvals and are beginning to buy more actively. We haven't seen a significant increase in pricing. I think some lenders are trying to monetize some of their portfolios and maybe looking for liquidity at any price. And this may happen more as production volumes decline in a rising rate environment. We have seen more trades. I think pricing may have come up a little bit, but not significantly.
Right.
I don't know whether that will continue. The banks are limited by the capital requirements, especially under the new Basel guidelines, Basel III.
Right.
The non-traditional investors are getting in, but slowly. And it's not clear, if that market will continue to accelerate or kind of limp along.
That is, it's interesting to see that there is activity in trading, but I'm surprised that there isn't more value in these loans. But can you explain how the new agency volume caps work? I think it's another issue that people have been asking us about.
Absolutely. And they seem to be the caps. We haven't heard of a concrete formula. The number that I've heard most often is about 20 to 1 on 20 times net worth as an annual cap. And then there also are maximum volumes within a particular month. So I talked to one lender last week that had a cap of $140 million in the first year, but not to exceed $35 million in one particular month.
Oh, interesting.
So that
is that
was,
because
that
of net worth? Is that a net worth calculation?
That's a net worth calculation, Ryan.
And
our understanding is that as lenders gain more experience and their capability is proven and the agencies see how the portfolios perform, that those caps may be increased. But again, I just want to emphasize, we tend to hear 20 to 1 as a common number, but I haven't heard that that's a hard and fast rule. So I think it depends on the prior experience of the lender and maybe the warehouse banks that are involved, the FHA compare ratio, and a number of other variables that the agencies use. And we have not yet seen Freddie Mac and Ginnie Mae impose specific volume caps. So far, it seems to be limited to Fannie Mae, although you would think that the others would follow suit.
Correct, yeah. It would seem logical that they would. Let's talk about some of the duties that are out there. I mean, what duties do we continue to perform if doing in-house, if we do use a subservicer? So there's some functions. Just because you're outsourcing it, it's not out of sight, out of mind. There are some functions that are done. What are the duties that continue for the lender that is using a subservicer, and such as yourself?
Right. Well, the first is everything related to getting the loan originated, processed, closed, and funded. All the post-closing quality control, the re-underwriting, tracking missing documents, all of those functions stay with the lender. HMDA reporting stays with the lender and usually is continued to be done off the loan origination system. The document custodian relationship is maintained by the lender, or established and maintained by the lender. Usually the subservicer is given authority to request documents, but that relationship has to be put in place and maintained by the lender according to the agency requirements. And then we talked about funding for advances as the other primary function. So I think those are the major functions that continue to be performed by the lender, even with a subservicer involved.
So the post-closing, the normal post-closing stuff that would be there, but also then getting the loan, you know, put on and then continuing with the communication with you guys. HMDA reporting, all the reporting requirements are still on the lender is what we're hearing you say then.
Correct, as well as the actual sale and delivery of the loan to the investor,
right,
whether it's Fannie, Freddie, or Ginnie. So the secondary market function and any hedging that's done, all of those functions continue to be performed by the lender or other parties that they may work with to help them in those areas.
David, what are you experiencing as far as someone wanting to get approved? How long is it taking from what you're seeing? Annie, I know you do know we do this as a service, and so, but what are you seeing generally?
Right, and one thing I would say is we've seen the lenders that have worked with your firm to get help in preparing their submissions have better success because they tend not to experience the rejects and the setbacks. So you all have done a great job in making sure that lenders submit a pristine package, which will help them get approved more quickly. What we're seeing is Fannie Mae has done the best and has gotten the process down to about 6 months for lenders that submit a thorough and complete package. Thank you. Freddie Mac seems to be running 6 to 12 months, maybe 6 to 9 months in most cases. And unfortunately, Ginnie Mae is still running 12 to 18 months.
Yeah. We're seeing a few in Ginnie Mae get done less than 12 months, but that's exactly what we're seeing as well. It's just the reality. Fannie has just been excellent to work with. They really are stepping up on making it clearer and easier to do that. So they're right now getting the star, the gold star, for the time frames and the turnarounds. But the key is a complete package. And David, thanks so much for those you've directed to contact us. That's just so true. We're now batting 1,000. In other words, we have not had one package that we've taken on that we've submitted. Now, sometimes it takes us a long time to get the package ready to get submitted, and if they continue to work with us, once we get that package done and they examine the processes, we're getting them done rather quickly, and Fannie Mae has taken notice of that. So that's good. But let's talk about what the application approval, the application or the approval process for working with a subservicer. One thing is to get approved with the agency, but you know they just assume I'll just go get Dovamil. You guys are doing a better job of really scrutinizing who you're bringing on. Tell us about that.
We do an underwriting review as well, and we look at the company history, the ownership, the business activities. We do a full review of the financial statements. We evaluate which accounting firms are used. We evaluate which warehouse lenders are used. We look at the FHA compare score, and we review for any outstanding or prior litigation. To see mm-hmm. how that service or lender has performed. So those are all the variables that we look at. We're able to turn that process around much more quickly than the agencies. we do not have to review all the underwriting and origination procedures. So we're able to to do our review more quickly.
But I think a lot of people have the misnomer of, oh, that I can just get approved with them. There's no issues there. You're not approving everybody. You are taking a look at the list and these various components you just described. So I think that's important, David, that people understand you're not just taking on anybody who will throw an application at you.
That's exactly right. We have counterparty risk as a contractor, as a vendor, and so we want to be careful who we're doing business with so we're not drawn into difficult situations. So, and I think that's true for all subservicers are being very careful.
Yeah, I think you already said that you're it doesn't take as long to get approved with a subservicer, but kind of give us some time frames. What should someone, if they submit a complete package, anticipate in getting approved with you?
We usually can turn around a package in about a week if we're given everything. And usually that's very easy for the lender to provide.
Wow, that's good.
So we're able to turn those very fast.
And then to get the agreement out within a week or two after that to get everything executed so they can submit their Fannie Mae application?
That's exactly right. We can get the agreement out within another week after that easily. Getting it executed just depends on how much discussion and there is around the agreement and legal feedback that we might receive and need to work through. And then an important factor is that when a lender applies for approval with the agencies and they apply based on using a subservicer versus establishing a servicing operation, the requirements to document the servicing policies and procedures and technology and staffing are a lot less when you're submitting your application using one of the well-known subservicers. For a lender to submit a package based on building out a servicing operation, they would have to provide the agencies with an extremely detailed implementation plan,
a complete
set of servicing policies and procedures, staffing, resumes, and all the technology that the lender will have in place. And we've heard many of the agencies say it's very unlikely those kinds of packages will be approved. They just view it as too difficult to start from scratch and too unreliable. So they're much more comfortable when the applications are submitted based on working with an established subservicer. I think you've seen that in a lot of the clients that you've worked with.
That's without fail, David. I mean, the
right.
Package we submit, it's all they don't. Fannie Mae never says it quite like this, David, but they almost go, "You're kidding me. Why are you not using a subservicer?" I mean, it's almost that kind of, what makes you think you can do all this? Do you have it? It really, in Fannie Mae's mind, they're looking at it with a lot of skepticism. Unless it's in a newly formed group that's come together that used to do this, it's almost without fail preferred, if not strongly recommended, that you have a subservicer. And, of course, Dobin Mills is one of the favorites we use. We're always bringing business your way for that very reason. Let's talk about once they are approved, and there's a period of time while that application is, like, let's say for Fannie Mae, it's 6 months. You know, are there steps they can do to be implementing the subservicing program? Are there things they can do? And then once they get their approval, what are the steps to getting operational?
Right. There are a number of things that can be done during that period of time while they're waiting for approval. We almost always perform the subservicing on a private branded basis under the name of the lender. So a lot has to be done to establish the telephone lines and the telephone scripts, to design the monthly billing statements using the lender's graphics and logos and color schemes, and to get all of the approvals that are necessary from the lender for the design of the new statements. Also building out a mortgage servicing website for the borrowers that will be linked off the lender's homepage, and building the connectivity with the loan origination system for uploading new loan files going forward. There's a lot to do, and then also developing any custom reports or data extract files that the lender may want to receive back to support their ongoing marketing and management reporting and analytical functions that they need to perform in-house. So a lot of the building blocks can be developed while the lender is in the approval process.
Well, someone, one of our listeners just sent me a text message saying, ask David, is it take longer to get that set up, or can that, is it realistic to get that done during the time frame that you're waiting for Fannie Mae approval, assumes the shorter time frame?
It's a great question, and assuming that we receive everything we need from the lender, it's entirely doable, yes.
Well, I assume a lot of people just say, well, I got that, now they're going to focus on the Fannie Mae approval. They don't really start the steps to really get the approval. And I stress to you listeners that are contemplating retaining servicing and using a subservicer like Dovenmuehle to really get working with Dovenmuehle aggressively right out of the gate, because when Fannie Mae comes through that doors to do the interview with you and the various steps along the way, they're going to ask questions like that. What have you done to get ready? So that's really important. Let's go to a question. I've got a couple more questions. I'm looking at the clock here, David. Hard to believe we're all running out of time. But can subservicing be performed under the lender's name? That's a question.
Right, and in almost all cases, that's what we do. So we set up separate telephone lines and actually answer borrower calls in the name of the lender. The billing statements that we send to the borrowers are all under the lender's, or use the lender's name and graphics and logos and color schemes. The message box on the face of the billing statement can include custom messages developed by the lender every single month. And then the website that we provide for the borrowers is also customized and linked off the lender's homepage. Or if the lender is a bank or a credit union, we usually link the website off the home banking system.
Interesting. That is, it's fascinating that you have developed the technology. So they don't, the customers, that the mortgage lender who's retained the servicing does not know that they're dealing with Dovenmuehle. They have, for all practical purposes, they see themselves working with the original lender that it retained the servicing. Interesting. That's great. How much value is that? What are some of the best ways for a lender to manage a subservicing relationship? You've been through a lot of these, Dave, and there's some I'm sure they've gone better than others. What works and what doesn't?
That's exactly right. We've certainly seen many of our clients be more proactive. So I think the first thing is to designate someone to be the coordinator and to work with us. We assign an account manager for every client. So in effect, we have a single point of contact for the client, and it's important for the client to establish a single point of contact for us. So that would be number one. Number two is frequent communication. We typically have a weekly conference call with every client every week, and clients need to be willing to support that and invest the time to have those calls. Number three is face-to-face. We like to travel and meet clients and get to see their operation.
So
clients should come here. They should come to our site and meet the entire management team and see how the operation works and get a better feel for it. And then the last item is that we have to be managed as a vendor with all of the oversight and audit responsibilities. But because we're in the workflow and because we're talking to the borrowers on a daily basis, the clients that get the most out of the relationship and really work it as a partnership instead of just a vendor are the ones that also manage us as an extension of the client, almost as a branch or a division, understanding that our employees are working with their customers on a daily basis. So clients will come out and do promotional sessions and meetings with the management and staff here at Dovenmuehle to talk about the culture of the client and the importance of the relationship with Dovenmuehle and their role in carrying on that client's customer service culture with every phone call that we handle. So that's where we see clients take it to the next level and really get the most out of the relationship.
There's so much more we could get into, state licensing, and there's so many things you can learn. David, thank you so much for taking time to get on the broadcast. How can our listeners get a hold of you to learn more? What's the best number?
My direct line is 847-550-7550, and all of my contact information and an email link are also on the Dovenmule website at www.dovenmule.com.
Folks, thank you so much. David, thank you so much for being a part of the broadcast. Folks, have a great Memorial Day. We're out of time. And happy Memorial Day, and we'll talk with you soon.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.